Jalen Williams of the Oklahoma City Thunder, and you're listening to the Boomtown Hoops Podcast.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of the Boomtown Hoops Podcast. I am Steven, and we are joined by Kate and Jackson today. Gentlemen, it's been a while. We're glad to be back. We're just going to go ahead and jump in. We've been out for a little while, but we took our own extended All-Star break. So, Jackson, let's go ahead and talk about that just real quick. Obviously, it's been a while ago, but first time getting to talk about it. So, go ahead. Thoughts on the whole, at least Thunder's All-Star weekend.
So, the Rising Stars game was good. I think it was pretty obvious. Like, Giddy was in full control when he was on the court, which was awesome. Thought J-Dub played pretty well. And that one, it was fun following on Twitter as everyone was like, from a national side, was like freaking out. They're like, Josh Giddy. And it's like, hey, this isn't new stuff. Like, this is an atmosphere he thrives in. Maybe not the lob. Still, I don't know if following that on, he admitted today, I can't throw the lob. But otherwise, I mean, like, that's his atmosphere. I thought J-Dub played well as well. The All-Star game itself is a joke. I have no further comment on that at this time.
I think one of the coolest things was kind of how the Thunder were talked about on a national scale. You said it, like, everyone was kind of raving over the Thunder, and it wasn't even just like Thunder, like Josh Giddey and J-Dub specific, because they were playing, but it was kind of like, look at this team kind of surprising in the West. I mean, that's just kind of cool to hear the discourse of people catching on to the Thunder, who were at the time on a heater, and we'll get to what happened shortly after the All-Star break. But up until that point, they were playing really well, right in the mix for the play and heading into the All-Star break. So it was cool hearing people kind of giving their kudos. Even though Josh Giddey and J-Dub were playing, you know, you heard about Shea almost immediately. They had to chime in with the Isaiah Joshi being the third-point contest from a commentator standpoint, which was also good to hear. So, I mean, just overall, just hearing the buzz about the Thunder on a national scale was good.
Well, the other thing with that is they had no choice but to talk about Shea because he was there sitting courtside supporting the guys. Like, that was awesome, J-Dub, of course, at the All-Star game. Like, it was cool to kind of see how tight-knit the group was there. Just one of those things that
country-wise. How about J-Dub getting courtside just because he's with Shea at the dunk contest?
That was, I mean, also the dunk contest, pretty good.
It was, yeah, it was good.
And it was nice having our guys quite glad. I mean, it won't be long before, you know, we're there as the stars and not just, you know, the star and the tag along.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you guys mentioned the rough spell after All-Star weekend, five game losing streak coming right out of All-Star break, you know, loss at Jazz, and then next night losing at Phoenix, and then losing a baseball home and home against Sacramento, and then losing that home game against the Lakers. So, Cade, I mean, you know, obviously we're not going to go through all these games because that would just take way too long, but just kind of an overall, you know, thought during that period, and then Jackson, over to you after that, after Cade.
Just obviously not having Shea hurts. He's a 30 point per game scorer. Obviously, you want him on the court during that stretch. He's kind of your, like, okay, things aren't going well. We need either a hero or a closer. You throw him the ball and you clear out. I'll draw a comparison. I was watching a 4A basketball game, and, you know, in the media area, you can kind of hear what the coaches are saying. Well, this team needed a bucket, so they went to their go-to guy, and their play that they drew up was literally, okay, let's just go with the fake name Jack. You know, we need you to get a bucket, and he did. And, you know, that's what kind of SGA provides for the Thunder, and we didn't have that. So I'm thinking of the two Kings games more specifically. Is like, we just didn't have enough offense. I mean, they didn't have De'Aaron Fox, but they ran some beautiful actions, and they can all shoot the ball incredibly well. So they did. That's what they did. And we just didn't have enough offense, and that's what it came down to, just not having Shea, not having the offense. You can't beat teams that are better than you whenever you can't score enough points. But I'm glad they finally got out of the losing streak, got back on the winning side of things, and somehow maintained their position right alongside the play-in race.
Yeah, the losing streak was tough. Really, the only game out of that stretch that you really feel bad about is that Jazz game, the overtime loss. You know, because the Jazz are a team that one we feel like we should beat, and we're kind of right there in the thick of things. Otherwise, the Kings are playing phenomenal ball. The Suns, obviously, and the Lakers are the Lakers. Some nights, you know, they look good. Some nights they're awful. So you don't feel horrible about those in general. It's that, you know, the Jazz game's one you want back. That's a game right now as of recording where in the 10th spot, you know, tied with them. It's one of those, you know, you win that game and you're a half game up. It could be a game that comes back to bite us down the stretch. But ultimately, like, as a young team, you're going to have stretches. And it wasn't like they lost five games in a row to bad teams. They're losses that, you know, you'd rather not have, but sometimes the schedule just puts it out there for you.
I know you want the Jazz one back, but the one that hurt the most was 100% the Lakers one. Watching Dennis Schroeder do what he did to us, bucket after bucket after bucket, and just stay so composed and just get timely buckets when there was nobody else playing for the Lakers. Yeah, that one hurt.
Yeah, and then moving right along, followed that five-game losing streak up with a three-game winning streak, capped off by a really good win at home last Tuesday against the Warriors. It was one of the few games I've been able to catch as I've been traveling a lot lately. But that one felt – I got a little nervous, guys. I'll admit, in the fourth quarter, 2016 just really messed me up with Golden State and wearing those freaking black jerseys. It made me a little nervous, but, man, they pulled it out and did really good.
The second Clay got an inch of space at all in the second half, I'm like, yep, here comes a Clay 9-0 run. Here it comes. I just kind of expected the entire time. But no, I mean, Curry gives you 40 and you still win by 9 points. By putting up nearly 140 points, you put up that many points, you're going to win a lot of games. And you kind of look at that trend. They scored 130 and 129 in the two wins before. The offense was a theme of things. I mean, they've had a really good offense since 2023 rolled over, and it's helped them win these big-time games and right off a three-game win streak that they pretty much needed after losing five straight.
Yeah, that was such a turning point because, I mean, obviously there were, you know, the back-to-back wins over the Jazz, which, as we just went over with the losing streak, like how crucial those were. But really, you drop one or both of those games, that losing streak continues, and we're not talking still in the play-in spots. We're talking, mm-hmm. All right, how low can we get for the draft? Because it was, yep. It was that close to just falling apart. And suddenly, you know, when, what, five out of the last six and you're right back in it. But the Warriors game was so fun. I mean, Giddy with a 17-17, like, Shea was awesome. I know the Warriors have been awful on the road this season. They're just a completely different team, but you did get a full Steph performance. He had 40. Clay was still Oklahoma City Clay. I feel like I should hate him way more than I do. There's just something about him that he's hilarious, but
you can't not like Clay. You can't not. You can be mad at him, but you can't not like Clay.
Exactly. And it's so frustrating. It's like he ruined a really, really, really good thing. And still, it's just like, it's just Clay.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. But
the guy that signed the toaster.
Yeah.
Yep. And then kind of bringing in the last three games here. The last Wednesday, a loss at Phoenix, the Darius Baisley revenge game, and then two pretty good wins over the weekend at New Orleans and then at Sunday night at San Antonio. So, Jackson, I saw you gave me a little chuckle there when I talked about the Darius Baisley revenge game, so I'll let you kick it off and then kick it over to Cade.
Yeah, you know, Darius Baisley, I think when he hears his name, it's like ears perk up. He's like, wait, I actually get to play tonight? I mean, more power to him. That was a tough one. I mean, Booker puts up 44. What are you gonna do? I think, you know, everyone. There was the jokes about us, you know, putting the jinx on KD because, you know, he's supposed to make his debut. But I mean, that's a tough one. Phoenix, they're starting to click. I think we're gonna hear from them down the stretch, not us as Thunder fans specifically, but I think, you know, if everybody can stay healthy, they're going to be right in the thick of things with a team full of Thunder legends and Darius Baisley. But, I mean, it was a good Lindy Waters performance. It was one of those – it was a weird game. Coming off the Warriors win, going on the road, that was always, you know, on a back-to-back, that's always going to be a tough game, especially without Shea. So, you know, that to me, that's a schedule loss. It's one of those that because we won the three games before and because we've won the two games after, you don't really worry about. But had we, you know, it's one of those, had we not been in the middle of winning 5 of 6, you have way more issue with it.
It's funny that you say that about Darius Baisley. So, you know, as someone who covers the Thunder and, you know, him making his, I guess, kind of revenge game, sort of, I was doing my due diligence. I was reading up on him. He played 6 minutes in one game as a Victory Cigar player. I mean, there was no reason he was going to play other than being up by a lot or down by a lot. I can't remember. I just saw that he played 6 minutes and it was a blowout. He played in the first quarter. Like, that was the biggest Monty Williams troll yet. He played games without KD there. It wasn't because KD was out. That's not why. So I don't know. It was just a Monty Williams troll. He knows what he's doing. Baisley had a few impact plays. He also did a lot of nothing other times, just kind of what you get from Baisley. But yeah, moving on, because, you know, Devin Booker scored 30. SGA was out. It was just a weird night. As you said, it was just a weird night. Move on. It kind of split up the wins. The win over the Pelicans was incredible because Shea had some kind of Pelicans curse. He couldn't score against the Pelicans. He just was inefficient. And then he came out and scored 35. It's just kind of what you want to see. Giddey, of course, was efficient. Jalen Williams, just his middle name is efficient. I don't know why he shoots the ball. It feels like 110% and getting you close to 20 a night. And then obviously the Spurs game, which was huge to watch, the most recent game. Usman Jang, just it was beautiful to watch him kind of, you know, grow in front of our eyes into, like, he went up to the dunk. He went up for a dunk with, like, bad ambitions. Like, he was trying to end someone's career. And, like, that, he's also a 19-year-old. To see that from him was just kind of, like, inspiring. Like, okay, yeah, this is he's about this. So that was cool. That was cool to see him run small ball five. That's a cool little wrinkle if he could start. I mean, if he could play minutes alongside, let's say, J-Dub, Dort, Giddey, and when SGA's, I don't know. Just, like, throw him into different lineups with Chet next year. That'd be cool. So a lot of positives, a lot of cool things that you get to see. Overall, I mean, yeah, you won 5 of your last 6. You have a stinker game against the Suns. Throw that one away. You have 5 really good games in there.
Yeah, and I think you kind of mentioned it during kind of our all-star recap of, like, national media is starting to pay attention now. I mean, I think from what I've been seeing, I mean, it was Sports Center with SVP, or I think it was last night or the night before, like, Usman Jang, like, his name was, like, clearly mentioned in the highlight package. So it's just like, okay, like, you know, this team, I mean, you know, right now they're, you know, 14 games out. We'll talk about that, you know, end of the season here in a little bit. But I think this team is really starting to gain some steam, especially more than what most people originally thought this team was going to do.
I mean, you got Usman Jang, who's, you know, at his very best peak. If he takes a huge jump next year, he's still – at best, you're fifth starter, sixth man, not taking a whole lot of shots. So, like, to hear him get buzzes, like, they're really catching on to know about Usman Jang, who does not get a lot of minutes, because I don't hear you talking about the Indiana Pacers seventh man. I was going to say sixth man, but Ben Mathurin, so that's irrelevant. But you know what I mean? Like, oftentimes, you're not going to hear about that from other teams. But, I mean, the Thunder are just picking up steam. They're making real noise. I mean, they're winning games. And winning games, you know, put you on the map. And then they start really watching, like, okay, there's Usman Jang. The one thing that I did notice over the whole past stretch is, like, Trey Mann is, like, almost out of the rotation. Like, he's in here whenever we need him to, like, as a plugging play guy for, you know, injuries, he's basically out of the rotation. That's something I noticed, and that we should probably talk about. Like, is this time? I don't want to say running out because he's so young and you don't give up, but, like, Usman Jang, we're kind of throwing him with the blue, and that's where he's developing. And you can kind of get this whole sense of a vibe of, like, we're focusing on, like, competing now, but also we're developing him through the blue. Are we going to have to do the same thing with Trey Mann? And why are we not doing that with Trey Mann? If he's not on the rotation, he might as well be with the blue getting real reps rather than just sitting on the bench as young as he is.
Yeah, I like Trey Mann's such an interesting, like, player to me because he shows so many flashes where you're like, he's got the legit, like, he can score at the NBA level. Like, he's a legit good, like, player. And then there's times where it's like he has the shortest leash I've ever seen. So I don't know if, you know, like you said, if some time with the blue would be helpful. If maybe it's just time for a change of scenery. I don't know that there's a ton of trade value there. But maybe just, you know, the best for him to do that. I mean, it just, he can't find minutes. And I don't know where you find them because, yeah, we're still developing. But, like, who do you give less minutes to?
Well, like, I mean, don't I mean, you think if sorry, Kate, I'll pose this question real quick, but, like, I mean, don't you think that if Isaiah Joe wasn't here as a 3-point specialist, that basically Trey Mann would have those minutes?
Well, it's what exactly what I was about to say is like you look at Trey Mann, you look at Isaiah Joe, and this is no knock on Trey Mann. Trey Mann did not do this because he was not playing well. Like Isaiah Joe provided something that the Thunder have needed forever. You know, he's the perfect guy to come in off the bench. He's actually, to me, he's shown more and more like off ball, you know, willing to like play with some confidence off the dribble. And, you know, obviously the defensive intensity is there, kind of like as that's all really Trey Mann can bring is intensity because both of them are kind of smaller guys. But Isaiah Joe just provides, you know, elite spacing that Trey Mann can't provide. Trey Mann needs the ball. Well, you can't plug him by SGA or Josh Giddey and he gets the ball. So like Isaiah Joe just fits the mold better of this team and what they need to do. And like Josh was saying, like there's just not minutes for him. There's so much guard play. I mean, look at J-Dub who has guard play, just got 10 assists the other night. Josh Giddey, obviously, SGA. Aaron Wiggins needs minutes. He's not getting consistent minutes. He needs minutes. Lou Dort obviously plays, you know, more of a guard at 6'5". I mean, there's just a ton of guard minutes out there that we're already consuming, and we can't even really find minutes for some guys like Aaron Wiggins who, you know, are a positive almost every game. And then there's Trey Mann at the very end of the bench, and there's just not room for him. I kind of agree with you. It is almost time for a change of scenery, even though he's too young to be talking about that. But, like, it's either a change of scenery to help him or let him sit on our bench because it's just potential. But then at the end of the day, it's just only potential forever if you don't move him. So not that I'm pro moving Trey Mann. It's just like I want to see Trey Mann succeed, and I don't think that's in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I'm getting to. It's not that, you know, we don't know what the final version of Trey Mann is. I've kind of often thought he could be kind of that sixth man off the bench that comes in and just lights it up from time to time. But we're at the point where it's like if Shea's not playing, like, do you want to take the ball out of, you know, Giddey and J-Dub's hands? Like, I feel like you'd rather have the ball in their hands developing because we know they have a level above what Trey Mann has, especially J-Dub. Like, if he's playing minutes, like, we're still giving him chance to create different things like that. Mm-hmm. Would you rather have Trey Mann get those touches? Because I can't imagine you would. Like, I can't imagine anybody outside of Trey Mann and his immediate family and friends would probably prefer that.
I mean, Coach Daigneault does everything with the reason. And the way he staggers minutes, when it's not SGA, someone else is creating, whether it's Giddey, sometimes it's J-Dub. It's kind of different every night, and he's still toying with it. But, like, I think J-Dub's explosion, because, like, we knew J-Dub's this all-around player. He's going to get clean-up buckets. He's going to get, you know, all kinds of buckets in different avenues. But he's been creating for himself really well, and that's kind of a role that Trey Mann otherwise would have had, but he doesn't need to have anymore because J-Dub's had this recent explosion where he's just been incredible. You don't need a Trey Mann to come be your sixth man off the bench whenever you can just stagger a guy like SGA and J-Dub who can play alongside each other, but they don't have to because J-Dub is capable of getting those buckets on his own. So, again, not Trey Mann's fault. I mean, just everything else came together before he was really inserted into the mix. So, not really on him. Daigneault can figure it out without having Trey Mann. Like, it's not like we don't have what Trey Mann provides elsewhere. So, it's kind of just a waste of a body to bring him in and let him do it whenever we could bring in a J-Dub who's also going to bring, you know, obviously his long arms, more defensive intensity, just, you know, more while playing the same role.
Well, it's kind of the conversation that we, like, everyone sort of has, but no one ever really has when we talk about, you know, the future. We have so many picks. We have so many this. Like, ultimately, like, you know, all of those picks aren't going to play on the roster, but some of them are. And you're going to have, like, there's guys that are currently here that aren't going to, you know, just aren't going to be in the long-term plan. And, you know, Trey Mann might be one of those. JRE, who's not getting minutes, might be one of those. And the thing with that is we've had conversations about different guys during the season like that, and then because they're not playing in a stretch, and then they go out and play and they play well and you're like, oh, they're right back in it. But ultimately, like, he may be one of those guys that's just a roster casualty because you only have so many spots. We have so much young talent. We have different guys that are stepping up. Like, we're still going to have a high pick this year probably if we don't make the, you know, if we don't make the play. And even if we do, like, there's no telling. We have all those picks. We can trade up and, you know, draft somebody else. Like, eventually, like, people are going to have to move along, and he just might be, you know, a roster casualty in that.
Well, I mean, talking about that, and, like, I'll make this quick. You're talking about that, and, like, we're having even a better of a problem. You bring in Dario Saric. You have Kendrick Williams, who both can play really good minutes, like, in a playoff series off the bench. Why do you need a JRE who's not ever experienced whenever you had Dario Saric, who can virtually do the same thing, except for he played in the NBA championship just 2 years ago. And then you got Kenny Hustle, who's like the ultimate glue guy. So, I mean, it's a good problem to have that, like, oh, we have to get rid of a good player to bring in more prospects, but it's just where you're at. I mean, it's a good problem to have.
So, like, if I'll just pose this one real quick. So if you were, you know, it's draft night and you could trade up your first round pick and Trey Mann, how many, you know, say we're at 10, like how many spots does Trey Mann move us up?
I can't imagine it's very many. I think that because he's not had the opportunities that I'm sure he would like, and ultimately I think, you know, we would like to have, I don't know that he moves us up more than maybe one or two if there's, you know, a GM out there that like really liked Trey Mann coming out of college or liked what they've seen in his limited minutes. Like there's potential there. There's definitely like, there's a player there. It's just, you know, you got to find the right system. I don't know that he adds a ton to us. I think, you know, maybe he's a piece. Maybe, you know, if it's a first and a couple seconds in Trey Mann or something like that. But I don't know that he's got tons of value.
I'm just thinking it's very situational. Like if a team like Charlotte, who they want Wembanyama, but like evidently if they think they can get something at 10 where we're at and they're at, they fought a six, that's not going to hurt them to trade back if they've got something that they want that they know they can get at 10 and press these debts out on getting a guy at six like he did with Jalen Williams when he traded three first-rounders to ensure no one else got Jalen Williams, which was hilarious. But like if Charlotte want to do that and Presti's like, okay, I really like someone at six, I think he could probably get you up to like probably six, maybe five if Charlotte really wants to stretch it out and they think they could use Trey Mann off the bench to add depth and just to give them some young culture to work with because like right now they've got nothing. So, I mean, it's very situational and it really would have to like kind of work out for everybody in terms of lottery drop and, you know, situational fit. But probably at most, you could probably go up to six if it worked for both sides.
Yeah, so I think kind of we just want to go ahead and look ahead. We got 14 games left. So, guys, I'm literally just going to go through. We'll just go through just one quick, you know, just each game. And we're going to see where this record lands through now, you know, before we get to this Brooklyn game. So, Jackson, Cade, basically, I'll just go back and forth to you guys, win, loss, and we'll just keep going through the rest of the season. So, Jackson, starting tomorrow, Brooklyn, is that a win or loss?
The win.
Cade?
The Nets one?
Yeah, Nets.
I'll give it a loss.
Okay. At Toronto.
You think Shea's going home and not getting a W?
He's getting a W.
He's putting on a show. I'm not worried about Toronto.
I'll second that. Toronto's just not had a great season. I'll second that. They're in the same boat as us. Actually, they have one less loss, but they're a game behind us even. So, yeah, I'll give us a win.
And then our Sunday afternoon game. We were kind of talking about this before we started recording. Sunday afternoon against Phoenix.
I don't like it. That's a loss.
Loss and a Cade.
I'm gonna go spicier on this. I like this one. I do. Ooh. Kevin Durant's still gonna be out, and SGA is gonna come in, and he didn't get to play last time. I mean, I like this one.
And then we've got our baseball series against the Clippers. So two games against the Clippers.
This is a stretch I'm very concerned about. We're a young team, and we're gonna spend 4 days in LA. I don't love. There's off days in there. Feels like things could go sideways if the guys enjoy LA too much. If we split with the Clippers, I'd be happy. I think we go 1-1.
We were the Clippers. We were the Clippers' kryptonite early in the season. We were their kryptonite. I like at least a split. I mean, I know that it's going to be a tough stretch, but we 2-0 swept them in the last baseball series we had against them. I like a 1-1 split.
And then following that up the day after the second game at the Clippers, another game against the Lakers.
I think that's probably a loss. It's one of our two back-to-backs that are left. If Shea's not playing the back end of a back-to-back.
If Shea plays, he gets an I'm him moment, though, if he does play. If he plays,
you know, maybe we beat the Clippers the first time and we decide to rest Shea on the first game instead of the second game of the back-to-back, I don't know. That's especially, you know, it's like I said, it's the fourth day in a row in LA. Like if Shea's not playing on the back to back, it's going to be tough. It doesn't mean it can't happen. I think it's probably a loss.
Fortunately, Josh Giddey can't legally drink yet. So, but I'll go with the probably a loss against the Lakers.
Okay, and then finishing up that forever long, what seems like forever long West Coast swing. Fortunately, they get a day rest on that Saturday, but then Sunday at Portland.
Portland's kind of, I mean, they seem to have fallen off completely. I think that's a win, especially, you know, you get out of LA, you have a rest day, Shea plays. I think we go to Portland and I think it's a win.
If you told me there was a four-way tie in the West for the 9 through 12 seed and Portland wasn't in it and they're not ahead of it, at the beginning scene, I'd be like, whoa, what happened? What went wrong? But like, I've seen what went wrong. I mean, they're sitting Dame at this point. It's probably a win. And Dame probably won't play.
So then finally get to get back home. First night of the back-to-back. This is the week of the tank right here. You got a home game against Charlotte on Tuesday. So Jackson,
if Shea plays, if Shea doesn't play, if I play, if Cade plays, that's a win. the Hornets, they're bad.
I have to say the same. I didn't expect them to be this bad, but they are. They're just not a good team. So yeah, I have to say we're probably winning that one. And it might be by a lot. We might be favored by double digits for the only time this season.
Yeah, I mean, no Lamelo. I think that's got to be.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the thing that went wrong for the Hornets this year, primarily, I personally. Mm-hmm. But then the second night of the back-to-back, the tanking Detroit Pistons, Jackson, that a dub?
Maybe a J dub. That's the thing. I mean, if Shea doesn't play, regardless if Shea plays, if he doesn't, which is kind of the key to so many of these games, like these are two games that if we want to make the play in, we don't have a choice. Like we're at home, you're playing the bottom of the bottom of the East. Like you don't have a choice. You've got to win these games if you want to have any hope of playing, you know, meaningful basketball at the end of the season.
If we're assuming Shea is not playing on the second half of these back-to-backs, that's not a long time between now and then. It's just about 2 weeks, a little over. I don't know that they win that game. I mean, that looks like it could be a low-scoring affair. Who knows? Jaden Ivey might go for 30 just because he's been bad, and then he plays the Thunder, and good things happen when you play the Thunder. So I don't know. It feels like it could end up being a loss, but I think it'll be close. I think it might be it'll probably end up being a win, so I'll go with that.
I'm kind of looking at those two, like the Pelican-Spurs game that we just played, you know, those last two nights where that maybe even in a reverse order that like the Pistons might be a little better than the Hornets, but like when we played the Spurs, who are the worst team in the NBA, like far and away, like
our and sitting two of their best players.
Yeah, like we should have won that game no matter what. I kind of am looking at this game the same way and hoping that, you know, even no SGA, like that Giddy and JW is the chance to show out. And these are just two games we have to have.
Then going out on the day of rest, away at Indiana. Once again, another battle for the tank.
I mean, if you don't win both of the games against Charlotte and Detroit, you've got to beat Indiana. If for some reason we were to drop like two out of those three, then I'm full back in on the tank. Shut everybody down. Like Trey Mann is the only person allowed to play. We're right there. We're where we want to be. Like if. Honestly, that should be three wins in a row. I'm hoping it is. I'm going to say three wins in a row. But the way I look at that is like, you know, if for some reason we don't sweep the two home games in the back to back, you've got to go to Indiana and get the win.
I'll probably go with the same thing. I mean, looking at April's games, these are pretty much must win games. So yeah, and then given the fact that the Pacers kind of fell off towards after the All-Star break. They're not going to be inclined to play their older guys so long. Like Buddy Hill doesn't need to play a ton and, you know, just light things up. It's probably going to be a Ben Mather and it's probably going to be the younger guys. Andrew Nembhard's going to play a lot. So for them, kind of like where we were last year, they're just probably going to prioritize younger guys. They don't care to win. We need the win. So we're going to get the win.
So win for both of you guys on against Indiana.
Yeah.
Okay. And then coming back home against Phoenix again. I love how we've just decided to play all our games against Phoenix after All-Star break.
Yep.
Thank the great Jazz. Scheduling.
Yeah. Which it's due to injury, it hasn't been even though he did play. But it was like, oh wait, hey, Kevin Durant got traded to Phoenix. We have to play them how many times? This is one I struggle with because it's our second to last home game. It could be a must-win game for us. I mean, depending how Phoenix goes, they could be playing for seeding. You know, you don't know if Durant's playing. You don't really know what that situation looks like. I think it's probably a loss. But that this final stretch is brutal.
I don't know if it's because SGA cooked Kevin Durant like four possessions in a row in Brooklyn that one time, but I just have this weird feeling that SGA owns Kevin Durant just because like it's SGA's place now and Kevin Durant's been gone for a while. A lot of Thunder fans have kind of forgiven him, but SGA's just like, well, this is my place. This is my city. So I feel like SGA probably goes for 30 in the second to last home game and we come away with the win there.
Okay. Then we got
to sweep in the Suns.
That would be nuts.
Two games left, kids like sweep.
Suns are bad. They're falling off.
That's my audio highlight for this week right there. Then we got a quick little road trip. First going out to Golden State for the third to last game of the year. So Jackson, win or loss here?
That's a loss. I think the Warriors are playing not great ball right now. I mean, they're up and down. You know, Wiggins is out. Is he coming back? You know, there's a lot going on in Golden State, but you get down to three games left in the season, and I trust them to figure it out more. I think, you know, that core they have has been in every situation. I think they're right on the edge of the play-in with the way things are looking. I think it's probably their experience is going to give them a win, especially at home, as opposed to our young group on the road.
I mean, they've been an incredible home team, and they did not take the beginning of the season as seriously as they should have, or they just didn't take care of things the way they should have. I mean, there was a lot of random Thursday nights that they just not just sat one guy or two, like their entire starting lineup didn't take it serious. They're going to need these games just as much as we are, except for the difference is Clay and Steph might combine for 90, so 100% a loss.
Okay, and then once again, a battle of the tank at Utah for the final road game of the year.
I mean, right now we're tied on record. That could be a play-in for the play-in. I think that game, depending on how the rest of our schedule breaks down, that could be the key. The question is, you know, what happens between now and then, really, for the Jazz. I think, you know, anything could happen, but I think we've been pretty accurate on our predictions here. Like what happens with the Jazz if they fall, you know, I think they're, you know, a three game losing streak away from possibly committing to the tank. It's a hard spot. I think it's one we're going to have to win if we want to make the play. I think it's a have to win, which means put it down for a W.
I'm going to group my next two games here because the way that these two are going to feel, it's going to feel like, you know, do or die. I mean, you're going to have to win both of them. The Grizzlies have nothing left. I mean, Ja Morant is in, what were the reports today? He's in Florida in a counseling group or something. I don't know. Something outlandish came out. I don't think he plays the rest of the regular season. So I think that one you could just pencil in a W. It's a midday game. Who knows if Dylan Brooks will even play them. I get him geared up for the playoffs. I don't know. Jaren Jackson Jr. is injury prone. Just gear him up for the playoffs. It's their last game. For us, we don't have that luxury because we're not 40-26 right now. So I'm going to take a win there. And then going backwards, I think this is why it's so important. Coming off of a loss to Golden State, you probably do need that win over the Jazz. And we've seen some pretty fun battles with that team. I think we have a close game. I think we sneak away with the W, but I think it's not without Lauri Markkanen give you 35 again. And then Walker Kessler doing some things I've never seen a guy like Walker Kessler do.
That's kind of the one where I can't quite figure out. It just kind of depends. I mean, if the Jazz lose, you know, four or five between now and then, and like aren't really in the play-in, like they might tank that game harder than anything because they'll want us to play in spot, so they have that odds. So it's a very hard game to predict because, like I said, right now we're tied on record. So, you know, it could literally be a play-in game before the play-in, or it could be, you know, a full-blown tank. You know, it's impossible to know, but I think regardless, unless we have an injury to really SGA between now and then, I think we're going to be right there in the thick of it. I think that's when we just have to win.
I mean, we have one more Dario Saric than they do, so we should win the game. Those are the real stats.
Okay, so you guys picked pretty close together. Cade, you have us going 10-4 to finish out.
I think, let me defend this because that sounds way too good. Let me defend this. The last time I predicted the Thunder to go 5-0 in a stretch, they did. Okay, they've been incredible since 2023 rolled over, and these games matter, and Shea is incredible. This is just him making this All-NBA case over Kevin Durant. That's all. I plead my case.
And then, Jackson, you had us going 9-5. So, I mean, like, you guys were pretty much just within a game of each other. But basically, I mean, Thunder, basically, if they win out, what, go 8-4 the rest of the year, that's a 500 record. And that gets you to 41-41. So, yeah, right now you guys have us going Cade 43-39 and Jackson 42-40.
Which would be incredible either way.
Yeah, I can say sign me up. If you had told me before the season, I wouldn't have believed you. I mean, I think there's a ton of winnable games there in front of us. I might have been a little optimistic on one or two, but for the most part, like the games are there. There's some hard ones that I think I said we're going to be losses, but I mean, Brooklyn at Toronto, the Clippers, the Lakers, like those are going to be some tough ones. But I mean, the Trailblazers, the Hornets, the Pistons, the Pacers, the Grizzlies, the last game of the season, assuming they're going to probably be resting guys, like the wins are there to be had. It's just, can our young group take advantage of it?
I mean, we were. On what kind of win streak coming into the All-Star break, we were hot. We were a really good right around 500 team. For us to end there would make a lot of sense. Then riding off a 5-game win streak would not surprise me considering A, how they've been playing, and B, just getting healthy at the right time, pulling things together. J-Dub's explosion, Josh Giddey, shooting the ball a little bit better after he had like a little bit of a dip after being, a 40% shooter. So I think it's a little bit of everything. I think it is that key stretch is it's 100%. If you can sneak a game in L.A., just one, and then you come out and you have a 4-game win streak from the Blazers to the Pacers, and then that Suns game becomes a game that, if you get a great at-home game from SGA, you pull off. That's a 6th game in a row. Maybe if you don't beat the Lakers, 5th game in a row, that's an incredible stretch that puts you in the play-in and right around 500 to make up for that 5-game losing streak to open up the post All-Star break play.
Yep. So, kind of as we wrap things up, I want to get y'all's opinion on I'll put it this way: do we think that Jalen Williams has a chance to win Rookie of the Year?
I don't think he actually does, but I don't think that's necessarily the right thing. I mean, Paolo came out so strong, and in general, like, he's got the name. He's got, the number one pick. I think if people were watching J-Dub, night in and night out, the way we are, I think they'd see it. I mean, Paolo has been awful. I haven't kept a super close eye on the Magic recently. I know there was a stretch where I think he made like 1-3 for an entire month. He's kind of hit the rookie wall that it doesn't feel like J-Dub hit. I think if people were keeping a closer eye on us, he'd have a better shot. But I think he's going to probably finish second or third, which I think is an incredible accomplishment.
I think he'll be third. I think he gets on the graphic saying these are your finalists, but I don't think it'll ever be anything more. I mean, when you're taking into account that it is a full season award, and Paolo Banchero had a great first half of his season. I mean, 23 points per game leading into the new year. I mean, a great rookie year. And all things considered, I mean, scoring is just up. So that's probably equivalent to probably worse than LeBron's 20 points per game in his rookie year. But that goes without saying, J-Dub didn't have the best, like, hot start. I mean, he was coming in figuring out, okay, what's my role? Okay, I'm in the starting lineup now. Okay, now what more can I do? And he's just been growing all season. And that's led to his rookie stride right when Banchero had, like, a rookie wall. So, like, it happened at the same time. And so I think it feels a little bit more exaggerated than it really is. I don't think it's – when you're looking at a full season scale, it doesn't really come close between them two. I think J-Dub could be your second guy. I don't think there's much of an argument between that. I just think Banchero did too much to start his season that it's probably out of reach for J-Dub because he did this with too little, too late, you know, not enough time left. Didn't really give him the amount of time to chase Banchero. Now, if he started this a month before, I think there would have been like a real conversation there, but I don't think there's able to be like a real conversation about that because of it.
It is fun that we're talking about rookie of the year conversation, regardless of, you know, how close it actually is. We're not talking about the second overall pick. We're talking about, you know, one of our three lottery picks, but it's not the one we took second overall who hasn't touched the court this year.
It's our lowest draft pick in the lottery. Of all three lottery picks, it was our lowest lottery pick. So there's the story. There's the angle.
Sam, I think that's fun. A genius man.
Yeah, I know. I think it's a fun little thing to look at. Like he went 12. And then, I mean, I think the writing's on the wall for, I mean, obviously next year, Chet's going to be in the conversation. It's going to be a hard one. I mean, that's a really fun rookie class. I don't care if you call him a fake rookie. Him, Scoot, and Victor, that's going to be incredible. And what if one of the Thompson twins lands in the right situation? That's just an overall Brandon Miller. I mean, it's just a fun rookie of the year race that Chet gets to be in. So I think it's even better. And then it allows JW to be in this rookie of the year conversation.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a tough one. But I also, like, Chet has the upper hand there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think if you look at, you know, what's going to happen, I mean, all of those guys are going to come in and make differences for whatever teams they're on. But Chet's been around for a year. He's, you know, gone through everything he's gone through, and he's going to step into a team that's better built to win than any of the other teams that are out there.
I mean, all three of the guys come from very, and by the guys, I mean Victor and Scoot, they come from very different perspectives that kind of are like, okay, he's going to win the rookie of the year because of that. I mean, Scoot's been playing G League competition. He's been around the league because of it. Victor's been overseas, and a lot of the overseas that guys that come in, like the Lucas, they play really well because of that. But then you've got Chet, who went to Gonzaga, one of the most pristine places you can go and learn to become a, you know, basketball player as your job. And then he sits with the Thunder, which is a great, you know, organization to breed you into a long-term NBA player, and just, you know, it's just a great program for young players. All three of them have had like an upper hand on the other rookies. Like, I don't think an overtime elite guy's going to come in and win it. No offense to the overtime elite. I just don't see that happening. But like, those three guys have had the upper hand. But like, Chet has had the Gonzaga experience turn into the Thunder experience, where we're like, he's seeing a lot of fun things happen. The Thunder have been really a lot better than, you know, obviously the last past 2 years. He's got to be like a part of that and like almost molded into this NBA player. And as he stated in his YouTube video that he recently posted, I just want to hoop. He just wants to hoop. That's all he's going to do. He's going to come out here and make a difference. And then also, if by chance Victor ends up in the Rockets jersey, they're not going to run sets for him anyways, so it won't matter.
Well, guys, I think that's pretty much going to wrap it up. We're starting to get to that point of the season where you can start looking ahead to the draft and who the Thunder might take. And if you think you know, Sam Presti says otherwise. So go scout the people who aren't being talked about hardly at all, and that's who we might go take. So, March Madness starts this week. So that's non-Thunder adjacent. Oh, go ahead, Mr. Virginia Cavalier.
Here's your fun fact, because I'm not an Oklahoman. That doesn't affect me. So people listening to this might love it. But only one team from Oklahoma made the tournament, correct?
Yep.
Their starting lineup is older than the Thunder starting lineup. So, you know, there's just a little fun fact for you. Like, you know, we're starting a younger lineup in the NBA than there are several college teams in the tournament.
There's that. And there's also the fact that we're younger than them, and we're looking at the draft where they're older, and we're also looking at the play in. So like, we get to look at just about everything right now. I mean, we've got everything going kind of, I don't want to say in our way because we're still a losing record team, but like, we're looking at the play in, we're looking at the draft lottery, we're watching March Madness where these guys are older and they're getting ready to have their 401k, and SGA is just our oldest guy, feels like, not actually, but, you know, he's our vet now, so.
It is the best time of the year.
The very best. Basketball Christmas.
Jackson, how far is Virginia going to go?
How many different languages can you say all the way in?
I think they probably lose to Alabama. Oh. Go to that, that'd be Sweet 16.
That's fair.
Do I pick them to go further than that? You know, probably. I mean, I don't know, man. Like,
are they winning on your bracket? Probably.
There's too much money involved for me to probably make that decision. It's one of the things. I just probably not. But I mean, I think probably Sweet 16. So that's your piece, yeah. Probably lose to Alabama if you're looking. You know, everyone's going to pick them to be the upset. they're not going to lose to Furman. I'm not worried about Furman. They haven't been in the tournament in 40 years. I mean, I am a little worried because it's who I am as a person, but they're going to be picked to lose. You pick them to the Sweet 16. You know, that's further than a lot of people are going to pick.
And since Evan isn't here, we'll just say Kansas gets knocked out like second round, and just we'll see what kind of reaction 100%. He gives.
That's if they don't get knocked off in the first round, of course.
Yeah, we'll find out if he listens.
Yeah,
there we go. There we go. We'll get an angry text soon if he does, and just say Grady Dick is overrated, and we'll fall out of the lottery.
Unless he gets drafted by us, in which case then, not overrated.
In that case, he's the perfect role player, and he's going to fit great with this team.
That's right. So, all right, guys. Well, that's going to wrap it up for us this week. Glad to be back. Glad to be talking some Thunder basketball. We will be back next week for another edition of the Boomtown Hoops podcast. For Jackson and Kate, I am Steven. See y'all next week.